Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. This hour, is it different this time? I was a young television reporter when this happened.
It is only after a great deal of agonizing consideration and great number of sleepless nights that I am able to talk of these unpleasant matters to anyone but my close friends.
It felt like Anita Hill's courage and candor had changed everything. It hadn't. We know that now, right? Is this time different? Nancy Pelosi calls it a watershed moment. But what would actually need to change to make harassment and misconduct in politics and media, entertainment, sports, business unacceptable for good? Are we ready for what watershed really means? We're going to contemplate that today with Ken Rudin and Megan McArdle, but I need to hear from you, too. Does it feel like the tolerance of sexual harassment and misconduct is narrowing and, dare I say, ending, that we're finally at a moment where the power has shifted? I'd like to know what you think as you see these new allegations against Senator Franken come out, as you've watched what has happened over the last, I guess, about a month here since Harvey Weinstein's allegations came up. I want to know if this feels like something is fundamentally changing. Talk to me about that this morning. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and on Twitter at Carrie NPR. Ken Rudin is with us, as he usually is on Mondays. He's the political junkie with us from D.C. And hey, Ken, good to have you on the show. And I'm glad you're staying for a little bit longer into the hour today.
Thank you, Carrie. It's an important subject to talk about.
Megan McArdle is with us. She's a columnist at Bloomberg View and a writer. Her newest book is called The Upside of Down, Why Failing Well is the Key to Success. And she's also with us from D.C. And Megan, welcome to the show. It's good to talk to you.
Thanks so much for having me.
Ken, I want to talk about these new allegations coming in from CNN against Senator Franken. There has been a lot of conversation here in Minnesota about how if it was a one-time allegation that he acknowledged what happened with Leanne Tweeden, that he could potentially politically survive this. Does that calculation change politically, given the fact that there are some new allegations this morning?
I'm not sure. I mean, it's a good question. I mean, the initial complaint and the initial apology from Al Franken seemed to say, well, yes, there will be a Senate ethics investigation anyway, as there probably should be. But it just didn't seem as damaging as certainly, I mean, when some people are equating it with Roy Moore. I mean, of course, that's an absurd comparison anyway, because we're talking about a difference between harassment, which is not a light subject to begin with, and then sexual predatory behavior to teenagers, and that's beyond the pale. But the fact if it's just not an isolated incident, if it's just something more than one thing that happened back before he was a senator, then it does raise troubling questions.
Yeah, for listeners who have not heard the details of this, it is coming via CNN from a woman who is from Texas, who says that in 2010 she was taking a photo with Senator Franken at the state fair, and he touched her inappropriately. The photo exists. We've seen that. And her husband says he reached around her and kind of pulled her into him. He pulled her in and pushed his head against her head. It was over pretty quick. And she says his hand wasn't around my waist. It wasn't around my hip or side. It was definitely on my butt. I was like, oh, my God, what's happening? Megan, what do you think on the political future here for the senator?
It looks worse this morning than it did last week. These things are complicated when you're dealing with something that's that fast. It is, I guess, conceivable that he really just could have grabbed her accidentally in the wrong place. You're doing a lot of these photos. I'm stretching here. It really does not look good.
Why are you stretching here? Because why?
Well, look, I always try to be the most charitable possible. But for the political factor, if Al Franken comes back and says, look, I don't remember this, or look, I do remember this, and I reached across this woman and I was trying to grab her waist and I didn't get her waist. People may believe that. That may enable him to survive. but it is definitely a problem for Senator Franken. I mean, not so much for Democrats, because, of course, Minnesota has a Democratic governor who will replace him. Mm-hmm. But it is it looks not good for his political future, even if he somehow manages to come out of the Senate ethics investigation. OK, I would be surprised if he ran again in 2020.
Do you think he can survive that long, Ken?
Well, I do. I mean, just as Donald Trump and his administration has said that it'll be up to the people of Alabama to see what happens with Roy Moore. The difference, of course, is that Roy Moore's decision, his future, will end one way or the other on December 12th. We're talking about Al Franken, who still has several years to go before his term is ending. And in this climate, you wonder if somebody could end. If you wonder, I mean, first of all, we don't know if there are other people coming forward. We never know that with anybody who's been accused of anything. We saw that with an Ohio state legislator over last week, who was very pro-life, pro-family, and he was so pro-family that he was also having gay encounters with young men while he was espousing conservative philosophy. Those things in this climate, can't seem to continue. You mentioned, Kerry, this is a very important point. You mentioned, is this a watershed moment?
Right.
And you and I have been on the show many, many times talking about whenever there's a horrific gun crime, a gun death violence that ends in either the slaughter of children in Connecticut or parishioners in Charleston, South Carolina, whatever it is, we always think, okay, this time will be different. And of course, nothing ever changes. But I do have a sense that this time something has changed. You know, you played Anita Hill's testimony in 1991, and that seemed to be a watershed moment. But the next year, we had a lot of feminists defending Bill Clinton against the women who alleged that he had inappropriate behavior. So much for watershed moments. I do think this is different.
Do you think this is different, Megan? Because I take Ken's point. In 1992, more women than had ever been elected to Congress swept in. But as Ken notes, there was a lot of defense of the allegations against Bill Clinton. Does this feel different to you? Before we get some thoughts from our listeners here.
Yeah, I mean, so Democrats have actually been coming out and saying we were wrong about Bill Clinton, or liberal pundits, I should say. But at this point, there is a flavor of, well, that's awfully convenient. How come you didn't realize you were wrong 12 months ago? But I think it is a little different. Although, again, with Franken, the cost is not that high for Democrats. They can replace him with someone else they like. The real test is going to be when this happens to someone who is in a seat that the party could lose. Do they throw that person overboard and possibly tip the balance of the Senate? Or do they stick by him and come up with reasons that it's really not as bad as it sounds? We aren't there yet.
Let's grab a call here from Nan in River Falls, Wisconsin. Hi, Nan. How are you thinking about this?
Good morning, Kerry.
Morning.
I'm a boomer, and you know, the conversation continues to talk about this climate. This climate's been here multiple times in the past in my lifetime. I believe it's really important that we somehow get younger women to sustain the outrage. They tend to be complacent and not involved in political discussions and political activism. And if they don't sustain it, it's going to be same old, same old.
So, Nan, this is an excellent point, and you've inspired me to also reach out to the younger listeners in our audience. So if you are, I don't know, Nan said she was a boomer, so if you're a millennial, let's say 40, 35 and under, I want to know how you're viewing this. And do you feel like this is a watershed moment because you're invested in making change, in seeing things change? Talk to me if you're 40 and under. Of course, welcome with everybody else, but I think Nan has brought up a really good point here. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, on Twitter at @KerryNPR. So, Megan, you wrote about watershed moment. What does that really mean? And you said in your piece for Bloomberg View, it leads me to a question I've been asking myself over the last few weeks. As the accusations of sexual harassment snowball, how ready are we for the consequences of rewriting the sexual rulebook so drastically all at once. What do you mean? Put some context around that.
Look, something like Al Franken did taking that photo, it looked to me, I have not seen the results of the Senate ethics investigation yet, obviously. We'll find out more. But it looked to me as if he was not, in fact, groping her. He was just miming groping her. And I look back to friends in college, perfectly decent guys who would never have assaulted a woman, who might have taken that photo. And that's a change, right? I'm not saying that that was right, but it is a change. I think of the guys I worked with when I was out of college back in the 90s who would tell dirty jokes in the office, quite dirty jokes in the office. That would never happen at my current workplace. But you know what? It never bothered me, and I never thought anything of it. In fact, I'm going to be honest, a couple of my own jokes that I would tell back. And that's just a big change. So if we redefine those things, I'm not talking about something like Harvey Weinstein. Now, Harvey Weinstein was just that has been wrong in all ages, all eras. He was clearly aware that what he was doing was grossly wrong. But for people who are doing things that are perhaps just juvenile, those rules are also changing. Asking people out repeatedly, something that happened to me a lot in the 90s.
Yeah.
That sort of thing is now frowned on, wasn't. And if we go back and we redefine that as this is beyond the pale and he should have known that it was beyond the pale, then we're going to have a bunch of guys who basically get caught in the kind of, maybe they didn't always act great. But they also weren't necessarily understanding that they were breaking the rules. They didn't have what lawyers call mens rea, which is the knowledge that you are committing a crime. And then the other factor is that even for people who did know that what they were doing is wrong, and I think about an older man who asked me to give him a birthday kiss on the lips when I was 16 or 17, he knew that was gross and that I wouldn't want to do it. And then grabbed me and I sort of weaseled my way out of his arms. That sort of person. Now, what he did was bad. It wasn't that bad, though. Even if he had managed to kiss me, it wouldn't have been that bad. And you think about 20 years later, 25 years later now, would I want that guy to be exposed and shamed and so forth? No. Because, in fact, maybe he's changed. Right? I like to think that in the next 25 years, I will do some changing. And we also want to ask, at what point do we forgive people for making mistakes when they were younger, even if they were bad mistakes? And this goes beyond the question of this and all sorts of crime. And I think in general, America is quite reluctant to forgive people who've committed crimes. But I think that in this case and in others, we should rethink that and ask, can we say, you know what, people do change and grow, and we should give them the opportunity to put the past behind them?
Megan, this is why your piece at Bloomberg really resonated with me, because I think there's a spectrum here. And I feel uncomfortable with the stuff that I kind of accepted as, oh, whatever. And maybe I didn't see it for the intent that it was. And now I think, well, that would have been a golden opportunity to call this out and maybe stop that dude from doing that again. You know, I take right. responsibility for this, too.
Yeah, I think how much sexual harassment I put up with. In my,
right.
And I'm not even, the stuff I named was not even the stuff I'm talking about. I'm talking about the actual stuff where the
Absolutely.
Guys were way over the line and I just sort of didn't say anything. And, you know, on the other hand, I was a consultant and I didn't really have a lot of opportunity to call our clients out.
Yeah, but I hear you on this. Ken, what do you think on that? We're talking about some nuance here and the spectrum of inappropriate behavior. And in retrospect, that's pretty tough.
Well, yes. And actually, Megan, the thing she said a few seconds ago is the biggest part of all. I mean, she said that there is more and more people who are willing to forgive people, but there is a difference between a mistake and a crime. And there's been something in the news. A friend of mine who works at NPR, who was accused of going out with an employee. This was, to me, not sexual harassment, but he reached out to kiss her and it was rejected. And that attempt, and he said, fine, okay, and that's fine. And he was later reported, and now he's suspended. Do I think that was a mistake? It was absolutely a mistake to do anything untoward or at least unwelcome Was it a crime? I just question that. And you know, when I think of what Nan said when she called in before about this climate that's been going on a long time, I always remember these stories back in the day. I mean, not that long ago, but Strom Thurmond would get into an elevator with a young woman and he'd grab her. And every time that story was repeated, everybody would say, oh, you know, that's old Strom. That's exactly what Strom does. And we
roll Cokie our Roberts eyes. Has talked about this, Ken, that he used to, he kissed her on the lips on live TV.
That was not a laugh of thing. It's funny. It's just that this is exactly how he would respond to Strom Thurmond, that he would just do that. And he was not alone. And as Jackie Spear, the congresswoman, Democratic congresswoman from California, said last week, that she knows of at least two members of Congress currently in Congress, a Democrat and a Republican, who have done this repeatedly. So, you know, you think that it didn't end with Strom Thurmond, and it's not ending with Harvey Weinstein and Louis C.K. But again, the beginning, the premise of the show in the beginning, is this a watershed moment where this behavior stops? I think it does.
You do. You think that?
I do.
Wow.
I do.
That was so definitive. You caught me off guard. It stops. I think it moves.
Oh, I think it does. I think because suddenly people are going to think twice, and it's going to be in the entertainment industry. It's going to be in corporate life. It's going to be in politics. And you know, you continue that behavior to your own detriment, because do you want to be called out, as Megan said, do you want to be called out decades later for something, some mistake you did? Well, now it's not going to be decades later. It could be weeks later. And I think people understand that. I do. I mean, look, I've been wrong on so many things, but this one just feels differently.
Shannon says on Twitter, I'm a millennial. It is a watershed moment, and we're sustaining the outrage. We are leading the outrage. My contemporaries haven't tolerated this behavior for a long time. It's often the older women in my workplace that tell me my behavior invites harassment. To the phones to Kathy, listening in Cushing, Wisconsin. Hi, Kathy. What are you thinking about on this?
Good morning. I have worked both in the public schools in inner city in the Twin Cities, and now I live out in rural Wisconsin, continuing to work in public schools. And I think it's not a matter of if a girl will be at least harassed, but a matter of when.
Yeah.
That every little girl gets harassed beginning at an early age.
Right.
And we need to start with the youngest people and teach them now, so that this doesn't become an ongoing thing that they grow into. A lot of little boys think it's perfectly fine to harass a little girl. And then I believe that harassment becomes then that abuse that you really have to be concerned about.
Yeah, Megan,
I think we have to start now. And also one other thing is just we have to believe the accusers.
Yeah. So, Kathy, I really appreciate the call, because I'm skeptical, Megan, of Ken's certainty that it ends and it ends now. I think what Kathy is saying, there's where the actual cultural change can take place, right? With the way boys and girls behave.
Well, we should also remember that when you're dealing with young children, right, if you're seeing a behavior in young children, you have to assume that it's something that's actually pretty hard to eradicate, which is why it takes so long to teach them, you know, to be civilized.
And that they've seen somewhere else, right? That they probably didn't think up themselves.
Not necessarily. They may have. I mean, kids are pretty inventive. And, you know, gender difference and sex is a pretty primal drive. You don't have to teach kids that they want to eat. You don't have to teach kids that boys and girls are different. I mean, they figure that out. And so, obviously we should teach boys not to do that sort of thing, right? But we shouldn't assume that there's just some cultural change and then that's going to make it all okay. In fact, people misbehave because they like misbehaving, right? Our culture is pretty down on murder, but we still have quite a lot of it, too much of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because there are other factors, and people sometimes do bad things either because they enjoy bad things or because they think it will get them something they want. And so we shouldn't think that there is some magic that you can do where this, you know, the kind of teach men not to rape phrase has always struck me as odd. There's no magic cultural value change that is going to make people who want to do something wrong stop doing wrong things. You can punish it more effectively. But we should also think about, as we talk about punishing it, What are going to be some of the side effects of this, right? Because, you know, I can certainly see an environment in which bosses unofficially or semi-officially say to the men, if anything like this ever happens, I will can you and make sure you never work in this industry again. Make sure I don't ever hear anything like that. And on the other hand, if you're a man, and you know that while we should, you know, absolutely listen to accusers, we should also understand there are false accusations of these sorts of things. So if you are a man and you are concerned about being falsely accused, what is your move? It is to never, ever, ever be alone with a woman. And that's going to have complications for the workplace, too. It's not just a watershed and everything's fixed.
Yeah, but this is going to be Megan, I don't think that's realistic. I mean, that's not the solution. Men just decide that they're not going to be alone with women.
Whether or not you think that's the solution, if you are a man and you have been told that if anyone ever accuses you, your company is going to fire you, what would you do? I would personally make sure I was never alone with a woman. So that no one could ever possibly accuse me of it.
When I hear that, I think, and where does the detriment fall to the woman? Because let's say you have to have meetings with the, you know, I don't.
Absolutely. I'm not saying this is good.
I'm saying that
working out all of this stuff is going to take a long time. And it is not going to be a simple matter of saying, guys, you're responsible now, we fixed it. The way that guys may personally choose to fix it is something like the Pence rule. And that is obviously something
that
feminists
exactly
got very
what I was
upset
thinking about.
Exactly. Right. Well, but it is, if you want to make sure you're never falsely accused, and there are people who do make false accusations.
Yeah, but that's a tiny, I mean, let's not even spend so much time on that. That's a tiny fraction.
We don't know. We have no way of knowing what fraction it is, right? I mean, there's not really good statistics on it. And so, you know, if it were me, I can see how I might be tempted by something like the Pence rule. And we're going to have to deal with that and work out, do we change it so that workplace socialization after hours is not a thing anymore? I mean, there's going to be a lot of, do we do the way my doctor does? Every time I have a male doctor, there's a nurse in that room.
Right.
I'm never alone with male doctors anymore. That's all of those things, it's not that these things can't be sort of worked around, but it is going to take time.
Just for listeners, if you hear Megan saying the Pence rule, it's Vice President Mike Pence who has said that he does not have meetings or social occasion with women alone, that he always has someone else in the room because he's concerned about the things that Megan's bringing up.
And does not attend events where alcohol is served without his wife.
That's right. Megan McArdle with us, by the way, if you've just tuned in. She's a columnist at Bloomberg View. New book, The Upside of Down. And Ken Rudin with us, the political junkie. And to the phones here. Oh, I'm asking to hear from you whether if you think the tolerance of sexual harassment and misconduct is narrowing. Ken thinks it's ending. I'm skeptical about that. Hang on one second. Ken, hold on. I want to know what you think about that. And that we're finally at a moment where the power has shifted. And Nan kind of issued a challenge who said, look, it's the next generation of young women who really have to be committed to this, have to be invested to this. So I'm asking to hear from you on, as a millennial, as, I don't know, 35 and younger, what you think about this. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828, and to Julia in Minneapolis. Julia, you're 24, is that right?
Correct.
What are you thinking about what Nan said and what we've been talking about?
I don't think it's over at all. Personally, I've experienced managers that take advantage of their power. And currently, we have these huge figures in Hollywood and positions that most men do not hold. So they're just hearing about this kind of abuse, thinking, oh, that's not me. I'm not some big guy. They're not going to report on me. Or they're just, they can't relate because either they're just hearing about it and they think that's not me, or they hear about it and they think I'm not that big. What I do doesn't matter, or what I do isn't nearly as bad as what they're doing. No one wants to think they're the bad guy. So women are like, yeah, okay, thank you. You're finally voicing what's been going on. We've been telling you this. Or we've been leaving jobs mysteriously. And how do you fight someone verbally, not really fight, but how do you challenge someone in a position of power when they control your job? In Hollywood, when you've got one person that comes forward, other people finally feel comfortable coming forward? What happens when you're the only woman or one of the few women at your workplace?
Ken, what would you say?
Well, I think that's a very good point. I think that everybody does not, every male who's in power and has power over women, do not see themselves as Harvey Weinsteins or anybody else who does abuse. But at the same time, I think we always talked about the onus being on women to prove it, but maybe the onus is now on women to not stay silent for decades with fears of losing a job. I don't know if there's opportunities and things at work that allow you to report these crimes. But I just kind of think that if nothing else changes, I think that women are not going to sit back and say, well, I'm afraid to make waves because it could jeopardize my career.
Right.
And I think more women will be empowered to say, if this happened, I'm going forward with it.
Yeah, Megan, there's where I think the change is. And that's why I brought the whole Anita Hill, Clarence Thomas thing, because changes happened. But then we reverted back to this culture where women did not feel like they could speak up for a whole variety of very good reasons. That part of this feels different to me. How's it feel to you?
Well, look, remember that sexual harassment has never actually been approved. That's kind of like a sort of cultural trope. It's not that, in fact, it was actually anyone ever approved of it. They didn't. 30 years ago, the guy in the office who was known for doing these things, people thought it was kind of gross. They didn't like it. But so why did they keep those guys around when people really didn't? In fact, most people probably didn't do this sort of thing. We don't have statistics, but it's a fair guess. And also, most people didn't approve of it. I think it's pretty clear from the cultural treatment in novels and in books and so forth. So why were these guys kept around? They were kept around because they made most women were, because of discrimination, forced into jobs that were easily replaceable. I have done my time as a secretary. And, you know, you try to do a good job, but you're not irreplaceable. Mm-hmm. You have pretty basic skills. And so, you know, the guys, on the other hand, might be sales guys who have a lot of accounts, or they're engineers who know how your main product works and so forth. So those guys are tolerated. The big law partner who brings in a lot of business, those guys are tolerated because they make more money for the company. And they're let go when they stop making money for the company. So how did we change that dynamic? We made it possible to sue. But, you know, there is less cultural shift from the 50s than to the 90s than we think there was. There's also probably less cultural shift now. What's happening is that for people who are famous, there is a call out,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
But in fact, we've had these employment laws for decades now where it's now possible to sue and get money if you have been sexually harassed at work and the company didn't do anything about it, right? You know, the company is not liable necessarily if you're I'm not a lawyer. I shouldn't get too far into this. But the point is, if a company has good procedures, they can probably, if they do something immediately, usually firing the guy, then they can get out of it. But the problem is with people like Weinstein is that he's so valuable to the company that it's cheaper for them to settle than it is to get rid of him.
Yeah, so I want to make sure I understand. You're saying there have always been repercussions, legal repercussions.
There have always been social repercussions.
Right, social.
There have been civil repercussions for decades. And so the problem was that the civil repercussions were not enough to rein in, for example, senators who are somewhat exempt from them,
mm-hmm.
to rein in superstars like Harvey Weinstein, or a movie star or a big sports star, because those guys make so much money for their team, their firm, you know, their production company, that you can pay a woman $10 million and it still makes sense. Like Bill O'Reilly can pay a woman millions of dollars.
Right.
And still keep his job, because it's cheaper for him to do that than lose his job.
I mean, Megan,
a pretty small problem.
Look at the $15 million the taxpayers paid out, right, for what was going on in Congress. I do take your point here. We've got a conversation going, if you've just tuned in here, about we've noted the latest accusations against Senator Al Franken, but we're also asking about something that House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi said, calling this a watershed moment in this culture around sexual harassment. So we're asking, what would really need to change? Megan wrote a piece for Bloomberg over the weekend that asked, are we ready for a watershed moment like this, with some reflection on her own experience? And I joined into that. So Megan with us today, Ken Rudin with us today, and you weighing in. to Katie, listening in Minneapolis. Hi, Katie. How have you been thinking about what Ken and Megan and our other callers have been saying about this?
Yeah. Hi, Carrie. I am 36, so I'm right on the cusp of millennial, and I'm also a therapist. And what has struck me in this is what a hard time we have as a society of holding tension, that we really don't do well holding gray, that this is, you know, what Al Franken did was wrong, and that doesn't need to be debated, but it's different than sexual assault. I think we do this with, you know, as we're changing cultures in schools around bullying, that kids teasing each other isn't always bullying. Men making inappropriate jokes or making, you know, inappropriate or immature comments is not always assault or harassment. And I think that, you know, as we wrestle with this, it's easy to go to an extreme. And what we really need to be doing is finding space for the gray and the tension along the way of this process.
That's really well articulated, Katie. I'm so glad you called. Ken, especially in the political arena, it's hard to, as she says, hold the gray, isn't it?
I thought what Katie said was actually very excellent. And that's kind of what I thought when I first heard the initial thing about Al Franken, what he did with this woman, you know, prior to his election to the Senate, that the fake handling on hands on her body, which may not have really happened, and if it was an inappropriate kiss, it's awful. But is it Roy Moore? Look, we elected the president of the United States after we heard him on an Access Hollywood tape describing the things he's done to women, which is beyond the pale. I mean, and yet weeks later, he was elected president. So for all the going back to the Anita Hills of the world, I mean, we still haven't learned any lessons when it comes to that. But Katie does make a good point. Everything is not the same, and we should not be jumping to, well, if somebody kissed somebody inappropriately or there was sexual harassment and sexual you know, inappropriate behavior for ongoing years, there is a difference there.
Call here from Suzanne about that, listening in Roseville. Hi, Suzanne. You wanted to talk about President Trump and these allegations Ken just brought up. What'd you want to say?
I just want to say it's the height of hypocrisy for him to make these kind of statements when, in fact, right before the election, he was not only accused by, I believe it was 12 women, but that we have concrete evidence of his harassment, at least, and possibly assault. And I'm talking about the tape that took place on the bus, and that his excuse was that it was locker room behavior, and that how does this get by? Why do we not call him out? And yes, it was before his election. Does that make any difference?
What do you think, Megan? I've been hearing from a lot of people on Twitter about, you know, the inequity of allegations against Trump, the way Senator Franken has reacted, then the way Trump reacted about Senator Franken. What do you make of it?
Well, look, a lot of people called Trump out. I don't think it's fair to say that no one called out that tape. People did. The voters didn't listen. And, you know, they're, at some level, you have to say, well, if you believe in democracy, the voters have that right. I don't say that that's the right decision, but you can't undo an election because voters decided to return someone whose behavior you don't approve of, especially when the tape we have consists of him saying something that I don't think anyone finds implausible that he did.
Right.
But we don't have, you know, we have not had the person come forward and say, I am the person. Right. And so, you know, that is a real question. I think you're seeing that with Roy Moore, too, is there are a lot of Republican voters who are just like, well, but Democrats made excuses for Bill Clinton. And as I said, you know, at the beginning of the show, when Democrats came back and say, yeah, you're right, we were wrong, it doesn't really ring all that sincere. 12 months ago, he was on the floor of your convention. Right. And so I go back to the question I had at the beginning, which is, at what point, certainly, look, elites are trying to get Roy Moore out. No one wants him in. They just don't actually have any, they can't force him not to run, right? They can't force him to withdraw his candidacy. And so the real question is, when you go back to voters, what has changed? Are people willing to make these, to really get outraged and really vote against their interests? How many young liberal feminist millennial women would vote for a pro-life candidate against a sexual harasser? Those are the questions we have to ask ourselves when it comes to politics.
Yeah,
I'm not sure that it's changed.
I do want to say one thing about Trump, which the woman who he was talking about in the tape may not have come forward, but plenty of other women did.
Absolutely, allege sexual harassing.
I just want to make sure we're clear on that.
No, right. But I mean, you know, you have a confession on tape that is a particularly kind of vivid thing, and it didn't make any difference. And I didn't understand at the time why it didn't. But the fact was that it didn't. And I think in part that goes down to the fact that partisanship is so bad now.
Yeah.
That maybe the normal rules about, because I think the weird thing is we say that things are changing and getting better. 20 years ago, if Al Franken had been accused of doing this, he probably would have been out. The party would have just shoved him out. And they would have put someone else in, and that would have been it, right? If Roy Moore, certainly. 15, 20 years ago, if Roy Moore had faced these accusations, he would have been gone last week. The party would have said, get out, or we will take you out.
Well, wait a minute. Ken, do you agree with that?
I don't, actually. I really don't. And here's why. First of all, as we pointed out, the party establishment clearly did not want Roy Moore. He's been controversial for decades. He was Chief Justice of the Alabama Supreme Court twice, and twice removed because he violated the Constitution. But the voters voted for him, and that's the difference. When we talk about, like, well, a lot of people they've acted more in partisan reasons because they want to protect their party. Well, to his credit, Mitch McConnell and John McCain and others have said Roy Moore is completely unfit to be in the Senate.
Right.
And this is a Senate where the Republicans have a 52-48 lead. If Roy Moore loses on December 12th, it's 51-49. McConnell knows that. And yet, at least in this case, he's doing the right thing.
Well, but look, 20 years ago, right? Like, if you look at what happened after, you know, the Anita Hill scandals, the Clinton scandals, right? A bunch of Republicans were forced out by their party when much less heated, you know, much less disturbing allegations than groping a 14-year-old girl came out. But the fact is, the parties are now so weak, in part because a lot of good government reforms, that they don't actually have the ability to move people out who are bad for the party, bad people, they think, and bad for the electoral chances of the party at the next election. They don't have any kind of mechanism to get them out. And so it is now all devolved on voters. And voters don't seem to be acting like we expect.
Yeah. Yeah. That's also, Megan's put her finger on the very puzzling. One of the really puzzling parts of this is where's the outrage from the voters? They're making the same kind of political calculations I see being made, you know, in some of these halls of Congress.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Alabama is a strange kind of animal. I've heard people, this is a very God-fearing Christian evangelical state. Half the vote is Christian evangelicals. And they say, look, whatever he did, I'd rather have him than a liberal Democrat. I mean, that boggles the mind.
I don't think
Alabama is definitive of what the country is at large. We've seen liberal districts or conservative districts reject their own. I think of Daniel Crane, the senator, the congressman from Illinois, who is having sex with underage teens back in the 1980s. And his conservative district threw him out, even though he was very conservative, because of what he did. Whereas at the same time, Jerry Studs, a very liberal congressman from Massachusetts, who was having sex with an underage male intern, was reelected over and over again by his liberal constituency. So a lot has to do with just the local politics at the time as well.
Not to mention Teddy Kennedy, right? I mean, Chappaquiddick, the girl died.
Teddy Kennedy is much more than Chappaquiddick, and Megan, you're absolutely right. And another thing about Mitch McConnell, when Bob Packwood, the senator from Oregon, was up on sexual harassment, and he would have been expelled from the Senate if he didn't resign. But when the Democrats said, I want to have hearings about Bob Packwood and everything he did, Mitch McConnell said, that's fine with me if we have hearings about Ted Kennedy too. So you're absolutely right. It's been done for a long time, and neither party is worse than the other.
Alice says on Twitter, at 26, I've experienced sexual harassment in the workplace. Surprise, not sure if this is a watershed moment in terms of stopping others' poor behavior. but it has empowered me and many others to call out harassment for what it truly is, which is a great step forward. I really agree with that, Alice. Here's Naomi, who says, this does feel different this time. The sea change started with the women's marches, millions of women enraged by the election of, and there's an epithet, Trump, pouring into the streets. This is a continuation of that rage. Megan, just to share one other thing here from your column that I thought was interesting. You say, we'll know we've made progress when women are willing to accuse men at the height of their powers, men who can hurt them for years to come or benefit them in exchange for their silence. And when the people around those men move swiftly and without hesitation to deprive them of the power they've abused, even though they'll be tainted by the scandal, even though they'll suffer personal cost from the loss of an ally, you're saying that's when we'll know the change is coming. That's going to take a while. But yes, that's it, isn't it?
It is going to take a while. And as I say, it is going to be a process that, you know, the revolution always thinks all you have to do is get rid of the old regime and you're done. And in fact, no, we're going to have a new regime. And I think the workplace may look different when we're done. There may be, for example, less socializing with colleagues. There may just be, that may be something that has to go in order to keep this from turning into kind of a neo-Victorian, you know, Saudi-style men work in one office, women work in another. There are going to be big changes coming down from this. But again, I don't know that we're there yet. We will know when we see, in politics certainly, we will know when the Republican Party expels a member who comes from a state with a Democratic governor, or the Democrats allow to be expelled a member who comes from a state with a Republican
governor. Where you're saying it's really going to impinge on their political power,
where it is really going to change balances, alter votes, and make it harder to do legislation. And that is the point at which we will get the real test. Because again, I think, you know, I remember Anita Hill, and I remember sitting there and getting awful outraged. And then I remember how all the same people I got outraged with weren't so outraged about Bill Clinton and in fact made excuses for him, right? It's easy to be outraged when it's free. What we need to know is whether people will be outraged when it is very expensive for them.
Jesse says, I'm a 32-year-old who's worked in the service industry since 16. Oftentimes, there is no one or anywhere to go when harassment occurs. And to the phones here, to Jessica in Moorhead. Hi, Jessica. Sounds like you're wrestling with this because you're a fan of Senator Franken's. Is that right?
Yes, I am. And I'm just curious, does it make a difference that after Al Franken was, you know, suggested that he had done this, you know, he offered up his apology. He didn't even offered, it was my understanding that he offered up that the, you know, Senate Ethics Committee open up an investigation. I guess I feel like he's trying to handle it as fairly as he can. You know, does that make a difference? Does he have to still be lumped in the same category as the worst of the worst? I mean, what's your guys' opinion on that?
What do you think, Ken?
Well, no, I think I agree with Jessica. I mean, everything she described that Al Franken did is exactly true. However, the new CNN report adds that wrinkle to it. I think that the inappropriate kiss, he said, I apologize, I made a mistake, let's have a Senate Ethics Committee. That's fine. If there's more to the story, and we certainly don't know yet, but if there's more to the story, then that adds more questions to to all of it.
I think we have to note what Sarah Huckabee Sanders' explanation, and I don't know how you answer this question. You know, how dare Trump point this out about Senator Franken? You know, is he the most unself-aware person ever? But she said, oh, well, here's the answer to that. Al Franken admitted it, and the president hasn't.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So then, for that reason, why attack Hillary Clinton for selling uranium when she hasn't admitted selling uranium? I mean, that is just an insane.
Don't go down that
argument.
Rabbit hole.
but
overall, right. I mean, does that explanation hold with anybody but the you know, the hardcore of the president's base, do you think?
No, it was a cockamamie excuse. It was the only legitimate thing they could come up with, saying, why attack Al Franken and not Roy Moore? I don't know anything about Roy Moore, but I'll talk about Al Frankenstein until I'm blue in the face. And that was just so beyond the pale. Look, I don't know if the difference, the answer, is separating men from women. I think there are some men... There are a lot of men who do know the proper way to work with women in the workplace. But I think the fact is, and I thought what you that segment you read of Megan's article was excellent. The fact is, men are starting to get the message. And if more men get the message and more women come forward in that sense, that's what I call a defining watershed moment that changes, look, like in everything, is slow and painstakingly slow, but I think changes are being made.
A call here from Rosemary in Minneapolis. Hi, Rosemary. Glad you called.
Hi.
What are you thinking
Thank
about?
You. Well, I'm an African-American woman, and I haven't heard anybody make any comment around that issue. Uh-huh. Now, when you talk about sexual abuse, it gets compounded by racism.
Mm-hmm.
It's historical. I'm going way back into slavery when it was accepted for men to abuse and sexually rape the women and children that were slaves, and boys are used as foot warmers, etc. So I can't elaborate too much on the air because I know it's a time factor. But as a black woman, I've experienced it when I walk into corporate America to apply for jobs. I'm 68 now, but over and over it was automatically expected that I was going to go to lunch, go to dinner, and hang out with the bosses.
Mm-hmm.
And that was expected of me. And so I walked away from several jobs because of that. And, you know, we have thousands of people missing in our community, men, women, and children missing, and that have been probably trafficked into the slave industry, et cetera, sexual reality, and et cetera. And so, you know, all these abuses are there. And just like when women try to report the fact that they've been raped, et cetera, African-American women, it's automatically assumed that they're prostitute or they're just sexually promiscuous. And so these are more issues, not just in terms of the sexual violence piece.
Right.
I mean, the racism is compiled. And if we don't talk about the historical pieces, I don't think any of this is going to change.
Rosemary, forgive me for having to cut in here, but you are speaking to the complexity on this. And I think more discussions on our part to come on that. Carrie says on Twitter, watershed moments are only as powerful as their ability to discern. Topple the worst of patriarchy, she says, assault in parentheses, the rest will follow. Megan, a thought on that as we wrap our conversation here?
I think I would have to go back to the thought I had before, which is, you know, the revolution, the hard parts, building what comes next. And I think we're going to all have to say, I think the good news is that, you know, a lot of these abuses, it's shocking that they went on so long and that no one stopped them. It's shocking that men would do these things in the first place, but it's shocking that they happened and no one revealed them. And now that they have, you know, we have opened up a look into kind of the world's sewer, but now we have an opportunity to clean it out and make it better. But we're going to have to be committed to, in a kind of friendly, amiable, towards each other way of negotiating what is going to be a complicated and fraught process of figuring out how, first of all, yes, obviously women have to call men out. They have to say no. But how we can change the system so that it is less easy for these things to happen, and how we can change the system to make it more responsive to people who have had these events in
Megan,
their lives.
Megan, I'm really grateful you had time to do this morning. Thanks so much for being part of this.
Thanks for having
really
me.
Really good to have you. Ken, as always, nice to have your insight, and I'll talk to you next Monday.
Thank you, Carrie. And everything Megan just said is exactly spot on.
Melissa says on Twitter, no socializing. Maybe men and women need to hang out more and talk about this together. I'd endorse that. She says, set cultural norms in shared space. You can continue the conversation on Twitter @CarrieMPR.